everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Galaxy Geekdom podcast. I am one of your amazing hosts, Crystal Williams, and I'm here again with my equally amazing and talented and funny and smart and everything co-hosts, Lizzie and Jazzy. My pronouns are she, her.
Hey, I'm Jazzy, she, they.
Hi, I'm Lizzie, she or he, whatever vibe you're on today, I'll go with it.
We like vibing around here.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had a fun time doing these last couple episodes, and you know, I can't think of why. I feel like there's been a through thread, like a thread that's continued through every single one of these episodes for the last 5 weeks.
Clearly, it's because we were talking about the Hunger Games.
Yes, we were talking about
Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about the Hunger Games meets Harry Potter.
Right, the epic crossover.
The epic crossover that Rowling had nothing to do with.
She doesn't benefit from it financially whatsoever. It was an independent.
As a result, it was the best Harry Potter thing ever created.
The best Harry Potter thing ever created was, in fact, the thing that had nothing to do with J.K. Rowling, and that was the Harry Potter musical series.
That is true.
Or the Potter Puppet Pals?
That too.
Damn. What did Rowling have to taint that entire thing? Now I can't look back at Potter Puppet Pals as fondly. Loud sigh. But no, we are not talking about the TERF franchise.
We're talking about the Mormon one.
We're talking about the Mormon one, not the gender critical one. Anti-Semitic gender critical one. But we will talk about the Mormon one. We're going with good old fashioned white woman conservative Mormon series.
Breaking Dong Part Dose.
Yes. Twilight Saga. This is the final time we're going to be talking about the Twilight Saga.
Thank fucking God.
With Breaking Yawn Part
Dawns.
Breaking Dawns.
Can I just say that these last few weeks have been just so fucking annoying, because every week I had to plan out, okay, what day and time am I going to watch this fucking annoying bitch choose between a dead dude and a wolf? How many times am I going to watch? And then, when I thought it couldn't get any worse, we had Breaking Dawn Part 1 last week, which fucking pissed me off.
Yeah, that was...
how did you like what happened in Part 2, Jazzy?
I'll say, in terms of the sequels, it's probably the best of them. Like, it's the one, out of all the sequels, it was the one I was most entertained by. And up to a certain point, it was the Twilight movie I was the most entertained by. Because it wasn't good, but it was kind of enjoyable for what it was. And the additions of cast members such as Lee Pace and Rami Malek helped it in my view. And then the ending just fucked everything up, and I was just annoyed by the end. So. Well,
entertaining to watch on Twitter.
No. Everyone was fucking waiting for me to do the live tweet on Breaking Dawn Part 2, because I had no idea about this ending. I knew people said the ending to part 2 was bad, but I had never heard about it until now, or at least I don't remember if I ever did. And everyone was so fucking hyped to see what was to see my reaction. So I was like, what the fuck's gonna happen? Like, I was kind of curious. And then I saw it, and I was like, oh, fuck everyone.
And it was all a dream. This was Tommy Westfall's hallucination the whole time.
You know what would have been a better ending? If you had the same thing where it's like Aro gets fucking decapitated and you have the flame. And then instead of cutting to before the battle, it cuts to Bella in like at the beginning of the first Twilight movie waking up. That would have been the best fucking
Wakes
ending.
Up on the plane. Oh, damn. Okay.
If you're going to do bullshit, go all the way with it.
Oh,
But no, like, it's funny because this was entertaining. I was kind of getting into the fact that they were gathering all these vampires for this big fucking battle. And I thought, like, a lot of them had interesting personalities. Again, showing that the most interesting characters in Twilight are the ones that aren't the leads.
I didn't realize we get an avatar in this movie.
Yeah, we did. Rami Malek's the fucking avatar, which is funny because he voiced a minor character in Korra. But, no, like, I was kind of interested in everything that was going on. Like, I was like, again, it was bad. The effects were terrible. The CGI baby, I wanted death.
Okay, but the Amazon vampires and the dude from the American Revolution, like the rock star, like this is cool shit. I like these people. Why can't I just hang out with them?
Right, and it helps that they got some talented actors and a couple decent names. Again, I really liked Rami Malek in this movie. I really liked Lee Pace in this movie. Then again, I really like Rami Malek and Lee Pace in movies in general, so.
Well, it's the same problem where it's like Stephanie Meyer lets us peek behind the curtain at this infinitely more interesting world and stories and characters and refuses to elaborate on them at all.
More or less. And then, like, but again, the entire thing is point, like, can I just say that final battle, as useless as it was fucking awesome.
It was great. It's the best action in the whole series.
It is. The effects are awful, but it's that special kind of awful where it adds the charm for me.
It's also and super chaotic, which is interesting.
Right, and you had named characters dying. Like, when I saw fucking Carlisle and Aro just jump, and then they land, and the camera pans down to fucking Carlisle's head, I audibly went, oh shit! Like, I had a genuine reaction to that, and I was enjoying the final battle, and then it was a fucking vision. Thanks, Alice.
Also, we've got some fun setup at the very end there for Stephanie Meyer's sequel series, where there will be another love triangle between the baby, the infant that was born, like...
Oh my god, is she seriously doing that?
The 16-year-old werewolf and the other hybrid vampire.
There's another? Oh, the one that they brought in as a witness?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Stephanie Meyer has problems. I think we've established that by now, but I just need to reiterate it, that she has problems.
Anyways, what did you think of the scene, Jazzy?
The
line read.
Oh, you nicknamed my daughter after the Loch Ness Monster. I am probably going to print out a still of that with the subtitle and frame it on my wall. It was so legendary.
Yeah.
It's so good. That's my favorite so bad. It's good moment in the entire.
I love Kristen Stewart so much for so many reasons, but I think a number one up high on that list is her choice of line delivery.
Can I just say, so Kristen Stewart won worst actress for this movie at that year's Razzies. Can I just say, bullshit, anyone who could read that line with the straightest, angriest fucking face does not deserve worst actress.
And part of what's so funny about it is that Nessie is like, isn't even a bad nickname.
It's a cuter nickname than...
It's a much cuter nickname than this stupid name you made up, first of all.
Also, I didn't realize until I was watching it that I realized, oh shit, this is Mackenzie Foy's acting debut, and she's talented. I heard her voice work in The Little Prince, so that was kind of fun to say.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm sad that her acting debut had to be a movie where there's a fucking pedophile, but...
There's another connection there to a franchise that we watched for this series. Who played the hybrid vampire?
Mm-hmm.
That's the dude who played Dom Toretto's dad in the flashback in 9.
That is fuck. Yes, shared universe. We got it.
It's all connected that way.
The Twilight slash Fast and the Furious cinematic universe.
Huh?
The Twilight slash Fast and the Furious cinematic universe.
It's gonna be Vin Diesel racing Edward and as Edward's running, like.
Oh, that'll be that'd be interesting.
And then we'll get Charlie Poof to come in and sing another song.
Speaking of Charlie's, Charlie was once again the best character in this movie. There was a scene between him and Bella, which I don't want to admit this because I'm admitting this about a Twilight film. I got a little choked up.
It's because Kristen Stewart and Billy Burke are good actors.
Yeah, it's not because of the material.
They're good actors, and they have very good father-daughter chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the whole franchise. Like, let's be honest, that's part of why we like Charlie so much, is because him and Bella's dynamics and interactions is good.
Yeah.
Right, and the thing is, can I just say the last scene with Charlie in this movie is the bit in Christmas where he find out he got himself a girlfriend. That's the best fucking payoff I got in this movie. I am so happy for him.
Listen, I'm going to provide you with some context real quick. Do you remember in Eclipse, the guy who died?
Yeah.
So that's his widow.
Oh.
And you want to keep in mind that her husband died like 7 months ago.
Oh, jeez.
I know, it's like Stephanie. I agree. I think it's really sweet that Charlie has a girlfriend. I love that for him. But Stephanie Meyer really sat there and was like,
A single woman? No.
What woman can I...
A single woman who's not a villain? No. Speaking of the villains, can I just say, one of the major highlights of this movie was Michael Sheen.
I was going to say that. You're saying Michael Sheen was going to be the highlight for that movie.
There is a bit in this movie where it's the scene where they're all meeting up and he's finding out the truth. I'm getting to it. He's finding out about the truth about Renesmee, and he's like, I wish to see the child. Which, if an adult ever says that, never bring them your child.
It was just the creepiest fucking line.
And then, like, as soon as he sees her, he just goes, which made me lose it, because that laugh was amazing. And Michael Sheen is the best part of these fucking movies.
Michael Sheen, Billy. They're all... The thing is, it has talented actors in it. It's just the material's just dog shit. Like,
yeah, I think another bit that I kind of got an odd chuckle from, just from the... I don't know if it was the editing or just the actor reading it, but there's a bit with Jamie Campbell Bauer's character, one of the younger-looking Volturi, where Carlisle's like, she's half human. She has blood in her cheeks. And then Jamie Campbell Bauer just suddenly goes, Artifice! And I don't know why, the read of that line made me laugh. So. Artifice!
It's blush, bro. Why the dramatics?
But maybe it's just because Jamie Campbell Bauer's fucking awesome. I love him, so. And he got a Mortal Kombat fatality in this movie. Like they rip his jaw apart during the fucking not actual final battle. So,
this is the most positive we're being about this bad movie. Like,
oh, don't get me wrong, it's terrible. I thought the leads were still awful. I think Stewart and Pattinson gave passable performances. I thought Lautner was fucking terrible in this one. Like, he looked done with this series.
When you look at what Stephanie Meyer did to his character.
Yeah, I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. It's just, and I didn't even think he did that bad in previous movies. It's just, for some reason in this one, he just really was not doing that great from what I was seeing.
Well, he wasn't doing much of anything outside of...
The thing is Stephanie Meyer decided to reduce his character to just being a indentured servant to a demon, this white demon baby, and it's really gross and weird.
Yeah, there's a lot of really weird racist overtones that's still happening.
Exactly. It's weird. It's so weird and gross from both directions, like, right? From the obvious, like, you know, we keep making the pedophile jokes, like the obvious gross, creepy groomer implications, and that's really unsettling and terrible. And then from the other direction of just like within the narrative, within this universe, what imprinting is.
Yeah.
Is like Jacob is like soul bound to this toddler and has to do anything she wants. He cannot say no to her. And like, that's so fucking weird. That's such a distressingly terrible narrative to write about for a native teenage boy and this little white girl. Like, it's.
And also, can I just say, not only is the fucking fact that the entire final battle was a dream stupid, but it effectively made the entire movie pointless.
Oh yeah.
Like, I'm not sure how you can make a finale film feel pointless, but...
Well, because in the books, it's like, everyone was wondering, oh, what are they going to do? Because in the book, it's literally just a conversation.
Right, right. I heard, like, I found out after, because I looked it up after I was done with the movie, because I was like, there is no fucking way this battle was it portrayed in any way in the book, and I was correct, so...
No, and also, listen... There's something to me that really I always hated in this narrative of just like having Alice and Jasper, like having your most powerful player really functionally in one of your most powerful players in Alice disappear for large swaths of the narrative.
Right.
So which is you weird. Can use her as a MacGuffin at the end of your book is really annoying to me.
The weird thing is, this is like the one Twilight film that actually won a bunch of Razzies for its respective year, including Worst Picture, which I don't agree with the Worst Picture win. I think I thought Battleship was out of the other nominees, I did see Battleship, and the bits and pieces I've seen of That's My Boy, those are both far worse than this, but
it because it's the final Twilight film. Like,
but Ashley Green was nominated for Worst Supporting Actress, and I'm just sitting here thinking, but she was barely in the movie. What are you nominating her for? She was in a few scenes, and she did fine.
She was in Twilight, and therefore we have to put her in the Razzie nominations because the Razzies are a fucking joke. But, like...
Yeah.
No, you're right, because she's barely in the movie, which is really obnoxious because Alice is most Twilight fans. Alice is their favorite character.
I'd
I
say
can
Alice
understand why.
Alice would be my favorite, but Charlie exists. So
Charlie exists.
But yeah, no. And then you have such a bullshit anti-climax that pretty much allows the protagonist to have everything she could ever want. And then you have this really badly filmed moment at the end where. And don't get me wrong, this entire movie is horribly shot, and the effects somehow look worse than the ones from the original Twilight, but there's this really badly shot scene where Edward and Bella are having a conversation in the field of flowers at the end, and they're, like, staring directly at the camera, and the actors look fucking high.
No, I know the shot you're talking, yes, it's terrible. Why did you shoot this weird, like... De Palma close-up of their faces for this what's supposed to be this like romantic and sweet intimate scene? I don't understand why you shot it like this.
Looks so bad. Like and again, the rest of the movie is not that well shot either, but it was at least in terms of shot composition, it was at least competent compared to this. So who is the cinematographer? I need to know. Who do I blame? Guillermo Navarro did the cinematography. Apparently he won an Academy Award for Best Cinematography for Pan's Labyrinth? This man did the cinematography for Pan's Labyrinth and he did this shit? What? What? I am just finding this out right now, and I am blown away right now. Like,
he also did Cronos and the Devil's Backbone.
Yeah, he's actually a good cinematographer. What was he doing with this?
He's Guillermo del Toro's go-to person.
Right, like, and again, in terms of shot composition, this movie looked fine, and like, nothing special, and then he just had this weirdly badly shot ending.
He just... I think it's reflective of how much he cares.
Maybe I don't know, he wanted to go home. I'm just going to go with that.
By the way, his filmography is wild.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over the place. I love it.
I will say, in terms of the credits, in terms of the big end credits, like curtain call type thing of this movie, there's a couple things I want to point out that I actually liked here. One, I did not know Christina Perry's A Thousand Years came from this movie.
Oh, yeah, like she wrote it for this.
And I was pleasantly surprised because I like that song, so.
Yeah, it's a pretty song.
You say thank you, Twilight.
No. And two, when they were going over all the previous actors from the other movies that weren't in this one, they included both actresses for Victoria, which I thought, oh, okay, that was nice of you.
I do actually like that last montage crediting everyone who was involved with the series. Mm-hmm. It felt like a nice tribute to the people who worked on the production. So good on them for that.
Right. It was nice. It was a nice high note to end on. Oh, another thing I want to point out. There's like this one vampire in this movie who is with them through the training and everything, but does not want to be there. And then he just fucking leaves.
Yeah.
And that was like one of my favorite parts, oddly enough. He doesn't come back in a big like, oh shit, hero moment. No, he's gone.
Either come back with either with the Volturi or come back when regret. Like, he just, just disappears.
No, he's just like you're all gonna fucking die. I'm out.
A fair assumption on his part.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a stupid plan they have.
Right, just gather. What was the plan? They just gather a bunch of.
Okay, here's the thing that you need to remember that the movie communicates so horribly, which is that what Arl actually wants is an excuse to execute the Cullen clan because he wants Edward and Alice to be part of his, to join the Volturi because they have power, they're powerful, right? They've got, she can see the future and he can read minds and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Arl is coming to do. He's coming to... And he has the entire power and force and fear of their entire world behind him. And he's just coming with this as an excuse to come and kill them. So their plan is to get as many vampires as possible to come and witness Rasputin growing up and aging.
Mm.
And so that can work as indisputable proof that they did not... transform a child into a vampire, because that's the thing we did that they're
being. Yes, because the Volturi have always struck me as patient and reasonable individuals.
Exactly, this is a stupid plan. And if fight comes to fight, man, and like that's why Bella's setting up this whole ridiculous Jacob's gonna run away with Renasberry to South America.
I also love the bit where it showed a flashback of them dealing with an immortal child and Dakota Fanning just nonchalantly threw a child into a fire.
Oh, I was going to mention that. I laughed audibly.
That's a gift of potential.
I will say, Michael Sheen is my favorite Volturi, but Dakota Fanning is a close second with Bauer at a decent third for Artifice.
So this is their stupid plan, and if push comes to shove, then we'll fight them. And we've got people with lots of powers who can back us up, and we'll do our best. But this is a terrible plan.
Right.
This is a horrible, terrible plan.
Horrible, terrible, not very, not good plan.
Oh, God. Also, can I just appreciate the fact that these groups are so far apart from each other, but, like, Carlisle's barely speaking, is, like, talking in a normal speaking voice to the point where you probably can't fucking hear him from that far, and you have fucking Michael Sheen constantly talking in this whisper. No one should hear each other.
What if they were just across the field and they were just talking normal volume, and then the other person just screaming, what?
Yeah. No, like, have a Kung Fu Panda 2 / Shazam moment. Where you're talking from far away and the villain can't fucking hear you.
That's a funny...
It's always a funny guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or that TikTok meme of, hey, what's your name? Do you know that one?
Yeah, I do. What's your name? I don't remember the name. Fuck.
I forgot. Hey, fuck you.
Yes, hey, fuck. What's your name? Reggie. Fuck you, Reggie. It gives the same energy. It's the same energy as, like, what are your pronouns so that I can insult you correctly. I'm about to go shit talk you. Give me your pronouns.
Also, by the way, it took them 5 movies, but we finally had vampires with very stereotypical Romanian accents.
Bad one.
Yeah, very. No. Like, like.
Maybe it was just bad to me because I know that guy from Shameless.
Which one?
The one with the white hair.
Oh, Noel Fisher?
Noel Fisher, yes.
He was the voice. I knew him right away, and you want to know why? Because he voiced fucking Michelangelo in the Michael Bay Ninja Turtles movies.
I forgot about that. Yeah, I just know him as the douchebag guy who turns out to be bully, who turns out to be gay and gets a relationship with one of the other main characters.
We do not care what you did, Carlisle. Like, goddamn, they have a more cartoony Romanian accent than I do. And mine is cartoony, trust me.
It was very funny, too. The movie is probably filled to the brim with the most, like, so bad, it's good little moments, especially, like, the line readings and stuff. Which I appreciated.
I would like to deliver my biggest, and I alluded to this in an earlier episode, but my biggest issue with this whole franchise, which is okay. That Bella sacrifices nothing.
Pretty much, yeah.
Absolutely nothing. She gets to keep Jacob. She gets to keep her dad. She gets a baby that she never wanted and doesn't actually have to raise because Jacob and Rosalie are doing it for her. She gets Edward and she gets to be a vampire. Like, Bella gets everything she wants and loses absolutely nothing. So all of the stakes of this entire franchise was for nothing.
They got Jacob a fake passport and everything. It said Jacob Wolf.
It's a great name. That's a great name.
I didn't read that.
Yeah, no, his passport, his fake ID name is Jacob Wolf.
No one could.
I was actually so pissed about this ending that I wrote my own alternate ending. I hope you guys like it. So, battle plays out. It's not a dream. Aro dies. The vampires drag and kill Bella and Edward and pretty much everyone. All the main characters are fucking dead. Renesmee and Jacob escape to wherever they need to go. And then Jacob faces his worst enemy, Chris Hansen. And so Charlie, finding out what happened, ends up adopting Renesmee and manages to find happiness in his despair upon losing Bella. This is a good ending for the only reason that Charlie is the fucking hero by the end.
Yeah, that's a good ending.
Thank you.
Solid ending.
I thought this out. Like, I put more thought into this than this series is worth. Like.
Yeah, you probably put too much thought into this.
Probably, but you know what? I'm fucking happy.
I went in and just head empty. You know, no thoughts, head empty.
Like I said, this is probably the best movie up until you get to that point where it's all a fucking... The entire battle's all a dream and you realize
I would say it's the most entertaining movie. But I think the first one is better made.
Yeah, I can say that.
The first one is an overall better movie, but I understand what you mean by this one being more entertaining.
Right.
And I was about to rank this one above the first one, and then that fucking twist happened, and I rank it below. Still better than the other sequels. I would much rather watch this than New Moon Eclipse or Breaking Dawn Part 1, especially Breaking Dawn Part 1.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think we all have very similar feelings to each of the films.
Mm-hmm. If it didn't have the ending bullshit, I would have given this film a 5 out of 10, actually. but because it did, I knock it down to a 3. So.
Same. I think a 3 is good.
I think I'm going to give it a 4 to be slightly different.
Well, dang.
Just because I laughed hard at moments.
That's fair. Cute.
That's only reason, like.
I forgot to tell this story last week, but on my second or third ever date with my girlfriend, we went to Gossip Grill, which is a lesbian bar here in San Diego, and in the bar, this is like a Saturday night at like 9 o'clock at night, so it's like, you know, nightclub bar type environment, and they just had Breaking Dawn Part 1 playing on the TV in the bar.
Oh, God.
Excuse me?
That I can't wait to when they got to the fucking C-section scene. Great to drink to.
It was great.
Like, were you there long enough to get to the C-section?
I don't remember. I think we were there long enough, but by the time it got to it, I was not paying attention. But fun fact, anybody who follows me on Twitter, my Twitter profile picture is a picture my girlfriend took of me while I was watching it.
Context is important. Now I understand. were you just watching the movie and you were just like perplexed at it? Like you
was,
looked.
Yeah, I was just paying it. I was just watching it. I was just like, oh, Twilight. My girlfriend. She wasn't even my girlfriend yet, but she took a picture. He was just like.
I'm looking at the picture now, and now that I know this context, that's amazing.
It makes it even better, honestly. Oh, so I guess we are kind of like heading toward the end of the Twilight conversation. I've noticed it's kind of drifting out. Is there any other things you wanted to bring up before we wrap up our little Twilight saga?
I hate the series.
I was gonna say, just as a reminder about the Quileute tribe one more time. Yes. The actual real life Native American tribe that Stephenie Meyer appropriated for her shitty books. Are trying to raise money to move their tribe to higher ground because they're currently at a great deal of risk due to climate change. So,
and again, please follow the link below the tweet when this is up. Like, and you can donate and all that.
All I want to add is that I fucking hate this series and I hate the fact that y'all put me through it. I tried giving it the benefit of the doubt, and it just continued to annoy me, so...
I will say that it's a bad series, but at the same time, honestly, doing this has been a blast. It's been exciting to go through these movies just to have something interesting to talk about every week. And I feel like we had some really great nuanced sort of takes in a more modern, fair, fun reading of this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel like a lot of Twilight discourse before maybe like a few years ago was garbage. Like it didn't handle these conversations well, if they even brought up some of the more problematic elements to the franchise, as opposed to sparkly vampire equal bad equal gay. That's pretty much what it was before. So. Liz, you want to add anything to this?
If you want to see the good version of Twilight, as I keep saying, it's True Blood.
Yes, and yes, it's a good show. It's True Blood.
True Blood has everything that would make one invested in Twilight, but also actual blood and sex and violence, and it's better.
Yeah,
I just want to say one more thing to the Twilight Saga directly, as if it were a person.
Okay.
Nobody has ever hated anybody as much as I hate you, and I will hate you forever.
Oh, that's so sweet. Twilight, we love you for the show. Thank you for giving us something to laugh at. now, as we will eventually do another series of films, but I think our plan is to take a little bit of a break and go back to our normal episodes and work on maybe getting some future guests for the show, you know? Yeah. Some surprises, some old friends. But it's time for me to find the best way to segue into our next segment. Chugga, 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 segue.
What the fuck was that?
Brilliant.
I have no fucking clue.
The train is pulling into the station of the next subject.
Yes, we are doing this. The next subject is... I don't know. Should we do the thing that we kept putting off, or should we do the other thing?
You're referring to this as with vague terms, Crystal.
Because I don't want the audience to know that we don't plan these things. What?
What do you mean? There's a 40-page spreadsheet.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Every foible is perfectly calculated and thought out, and it's part of the act in our show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Jazzy, want to talk about Sonic?
Yes, I saw Sonic the Hedgehog 2 yesterday is when I saw it. Get your day straight, Jazzy. I know you're not, but...
How'd you like the Sonic movie?
Look, I will perfectly acknowledge that to most casual viewers, this movie may not do much for them, but as a person who grew up with this IP and who grew up on Sega games in general, this was my junk food. I fucking loved it, so.
I want to see it, because like, the first one was fun.
Yeah, the first one was fun. This one was even better. Like, it was nice seeing more, like, not just Sonic, but also having Tails and Knuckles in this cast. Having Jim Carrey play a more traditional Robotnik, which I thought he nailed. This was amazing.
Well, that's awesome.
I have no strong feelings or attachment to Sonic, so I believe you.
Mm-hmm. I thought the humor was pretty fun.
Are you talking about Sonic, the fast food place, or Sonic, the little blue dude who runs fast?
Because I've never been. My girlfriend's very mad about this. She wants to take me. I've never been to Sonic.
Scandalous.
Sonic is overrated. What?
Eat shit.
Each six Sonic. Same with In-N-Out. In-N-Out is overrated too.
You know what? You can just fuck off.
No, that's just accurate. Sorry. As a Californian, Cali girl.
Well, look, you fucking hippie.
As a Cali girl.
Me being the old lady here, going just fuck off, hippie.
No, I have to settle some things. California girls don't all wear Daisy Dukes with bikinis on top. That's just, you know, I mean, well, sometimes there's like designated days of the week that we have that. We have to do that.
We do that every Friday.
Every Friday we meet up.
Yeah.
Daisy Dukes, bikinis on top.
Anyway, Sonic.
We're shooting the whipped cream from our boobs.
Yes.
Okay.
Jazzy, do you get our references or no?
Yes, I do.
Good. Thank God.
So, but yeah. Like I said, I liked a lot of this movie because it improved on the things that were good about the first one while cutting back on the shit that didn't work. Like, the human characters are toned down, and I feel like as a result they are better characters, so. Like, I actually didn't mind James Marsden and Tika Sumpter this time around. They were actually a lot of fun. Her sister comes back and, like, reprises her role in this movie, and I thought she was fucking hilarious.
I like Marsden and stuff in the first one.
I don't hate him. I just think I wanted more with Sonic, you know?
That's fair.
I wanted more with a title character, and with this, I got it. Like... Sonic
to be fair for the type of film that it was, I will say they used Marsden fairly well, considering how these type of live action slash animated buddy kids films tend to do it. I feel like he was handled way better.
But in terms of the main three, I thought Sonic was portrayed well. I liked his arc in this movie. Tails was precious, and I loved him. And I was so happy they got Colleen O'Shaughnessy back to from the games to play him. I thought she did great, and mainstream critics need to go fuck themselves.
Oh, are some of them shitting on her?
Yeah, there were a few reviews that were like, oh, her performance comes off as cartoony, and it's compared to Schwartz and Elba, which, fuck off, she was fine. There wasn't anything about her performance that was, I would say, stuck out from the three, and she did her scenes very well. Like, she's played this character for years, so.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't get a celebrity, to be honest.
Knuckles, I was so excited to see Knuckles, because, like, it's full context, Knuckles was, like, my favorite character ever as a kid, and I've been bitter about how recent Sonic media has been portraying him as nothing but a dumbass. This one brings him back to his fucking glory, and I'm so happy.
What's his glory? Explain to me as a layman.
Okay, so Knuckles isn't dumb. He's just kind of gullible. He comes from an ancient tribe of Echidna people. I know I sound dumb when I'm describing this out loud, but it's a cartoon, keep in mind.
It's a video game in a cartoon movie, yes.
Like he comes from an ancient tribe, and he's always been isolated his entire life, and so he's not stupid, but he's like when evil scientist Robotnik comes in and says, hey, this blue asshole is doing some bad things, you should do something, he's very quick to believe it. But he's still, like, credible as, like, in terms of his abilities, like, he's a badass, and they not only did they rightfully make him a badass in this movie, they got Idris Elba to voice him.
I still laugh at the idea that he said that he wasn't going to try and make it sexy, but that's physically impossible. It's physically impossible for him.
No, like, I thought his performance was great. He's probably one of my favorite actors who's played Knuckles at this point, because he struck a good balance between strong, proud warrior who's also very intimidating, but also kind of dense, not completely stupid, but he has his moments where he's like, what the fuck is this?
A little stubborn.
Like, right. Without spoilers, there's a scene, without too many spoilers, there's a scene where he's looking at a text message, like, they're spying on a text message, and and he's seeing the little dots that indicate that someone's typing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's reading the messages. And when he gets that, he just goes, dot, 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 like, with the most serious deadpan expression.
Okay, that's a pretty funny joke.
Mm-hmm. No, the humor was... Nick was fun. Again, this is a more traditional, zany scientist Robotnik compared to... compared to the first movie where he was as grounded as you can make a Jim Carrey character. No, this one was, if the first one was Jim Carrey, this is Jim Carrey completely unhinged.
Oh boy, I thought he was already unhinged on the last one.
Oh no, 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 my dear Crystal, you have seen nothing yet. He is just going all out with this one.
Seems like he had a fun time doing it.
Mm-hmm. They brought back Agent Stone, the guy who was helping him in the first movie, and I just want to say this, icon, pure icon, love him.
He was great in the first one, so seems like he's doubling down on, like, some really good elements and also doing some new things. Seems genuinely really fun. I'll have to, I will see it, but.
Right, if there were a couple problems, I don't think every joke hit. There were a few that were kind of groan-worthy, and I thought they could have cut down the runtime a bit. This movie clocks in at about 2 hours, and they could have, like, cut 10 to 15 minutes from it, honestly.
I guess that's a hard balance to hit. Mm-hmm. You want to get all these... Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
But as someone who loves this, who was a fan of this franchise as a kid, and is a bit more, I don't really care that much, but I'll go see these silly movies now. This was so much fun for me. I enjoyed it. This, if I was a kid seeing this, I would have especially freaked out. Especially because this one, the biggest strength this one has is it really plays into the cartoony nature of it all compared to the first one. So,
okay.
So, yeah, I'd recommend it. This one was really good and a huge improvement over the first one, which I already liked fine, so.
Yeah, I liked the first one. It's nothing amazing, but it was more fun than it than. It was definitely more fun than it had any right to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just glad that this one is doubling down on even the more fun elements. So I can't, the first video game I played was Sonic, so I have an attachment too.
Fair enough. Oh, and for those of you thinking of seeing it, stay for the credits. You won't regret it. It's good shit.
I'm assuming they want to do a third one?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And I won't spoil the mid-credit scene, but let's just say when I saw it, I flipped the fuck out. I was so excited.
Cool. Okay. That's awesome.
I'm really happy that it made you happy, Jazzy.
Yeah.
I love that. We also have another person who saw another movie here. Lizzie, did you wanna give some thoughts on the Batman?
Yeah, I saw the Batman. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. Zoe Kravitz and Robert Pattinson should have had sex. The biggest note.
More sex, please.
I thought Robert Pattinson did really great, honestly. I thought he was great. I thought he did a really good job. Big fan of this movie really pulling no punches about the fact that Gotham PD sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's a tendency sometimes to lean too much into the idea that Gotham PD is bad because they're incompetent, because that, I guess, is funnier and can lead to hijinks. But Gotham PD isn't incompetent. They just suck.
Yeah, I can agree.
They're not incompetent, they're corrupt, you know? They're just being bought off by the gangs that actually run the stupid city. My brain lost its place in what I was saying. I apologize.
Brain!
I appreciated, first of all, I really appreciated that they utilized the Riddler.
Did he riddle?
Sorry?
Did he riddle?
Yes.
Yes! Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I kind of liked this creepy incel Unabomber version.
It's funny because I actually didn't like the Riddler in this movie. That's like the biggest problem I have.
I know, and I feel bad, but I vibed with it. As for the energy of the movie, I thought it worked.
I do need to see it again, and I might see something in this characterization this time that I didn't the first time. So
I had one major issue, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this would be considered a spoiler is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a thing I was super hung up on, because it's really important thing to me about the Riddler. The Riddler is Batman's smartest villain.
Right.
And there's a specific thing. Crystal, do you want to just, plug your ears for a sec?
Sure. Yes, I will put myself away, and I will give a smiley face in the chat. Oh, no, we're giving behind-the-scenes secrets. I will give a smiley face in the chat when I've done so.
Okay. So the thing is that, like, Enigma, the Riddler, he is meant to know who Batman is. That he knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman. He just doesn't tell anybody because he has a superiority complex about being the only one of Batman's villains who is smart enough to have figured that out.
My problem with the Riddler was the bit where he just screeched Ave Maria.
It was a thing that I was stuck on. I was like, no, even when you're doing this creepy incel version of the Riddler, he should still know this information.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
That's vital to me to what makes him, like, distinct from other Batman villains is one of the things that he's smart. He's not just crazy. He is smart, and he has figured this out, and he's pompous, and he's arrogant.
Right. Right.
About how smart he is.
All right. Should we let Crystal back in?
Yes.
I am still alive. Hello.
Hello.
Damn it.
Our murder plan didn't work, Jazzy.
I'm firing those fucking snipers.
I bet they're at the wrong house. I bet they're across the street.
Oh, shit. They killed the wrong guys.
That's okay. I hate my neighbors. I'm not even lying.
Son of a bitch.
The snipers can't get me. I have the windows closed and the blinds closed and all that, so they can't even see where I am.
That's what we wanted you to think.
Oh wait, why do I hear all this buzzing sound? Oh god, there's bees.
Ah, excellent. How did
the bees get to you, but not? Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. Speaking of bees.
How convenient.
Bridgerton.
Okay, we were talking about Bridgerton, the show that I know nothing of. Let's go.
Bridgerton season 2 is great.
Is it now? Question.
The spicy Regency drama. I was living for the whole thing. My girlfriend and I had a gay tea party to watch Bridgerton.
Question, is it gay or is it straight?
Remains to be seen.
Damn it. That means it's not gay.
It's not straight is the thing. Is the other problem. So this is actually a debate I got in with someone on TikTok today that I got really annoyed about. So there's this one. So usually the main crux you need to understand for Bridgerton is the Bridgerton family has 8 children named alphabetically. And each of them basically have a book where they have, like, a love story. Okay. The second oldest brother is named Benedict. Benedict is very clearly being queer-coded by the show.
Okay.
This is, like, it's really obvious. There's another sibling named Eloise, and a lot of people think she's a lesbian, but I think that that's a lot more fan projection than it is active attempts at coding by the show. With Benedict, it's intentional. It is a very intentional. They give him, he has this best friend who is secretly gay. He does this like underground painting club where he's painting nude portraits of men and women. Like they're queer coding him. It's very intentional. They're queer coding him on purpose. And so whether or not they do anything with that is what remains to be seen. Not that he even has to end it, because I think that my read is that he's bi. So it's not even that he has to end up with a man, but for them, if they did nothing with that, for you to put in this effort to code him like this and then not do anything, that would be disappointing. So I don't qualify it as straight, but if it's truly gay, remains to be seen.
So it's stray?
Straight, and the curliest person.
Stray or European.
My jokes are always the best, right?
And my jokes are always horrible.
I challenge you both to figure out, to take a big guess about why bees made me think of this.
Birds and the Bees.
Nicolas Cage.
No.
Nicolas Cage should be in the next season.
I am so excited for The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be the best movie of the whole year.
Probably. It looks great.
It looks so good.
I love hearing stories about him from people who have met him. Like, I was reading and I was like, he's the nicest but the strangest person I've ever met. And I'm like, yes, this is the energy I like.
Nicolas Cage.
What was that movie he was in? He was in a movie, and the name is Willy's Wonderland. Did anyone see that?
Yes, I I got it. My friends and I were so hyped for that movie. We had a fucking pizza night for that film.
That movie was fun, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was.
And he doesn't talk throughout the whole movie, but he steals every scene.
Look, I'm just saying, by the end of it, I shipped Nick Cage X Pinball Machine.
Lizzie, did you know that the entire movie, Nicolas Cage has zero dialogue?
No, what is this movie?
It is Five Nights at Freddy's, but just imagine Nicolas
but
Cage.
But not made by an asshole.
Yes, so I'll give a general premise. So imagine that Nicolas Cage is driving in a super fancy car, and then, like, on this road, it's given no context for what's happening, then boom, his tires blow out. And he's stuck in this small town, but he doesn't have enough money to fix the car. So the townspeople there, or mechanic, and I believe the mayor, offer him a position at a rundown Chuck E. Cheese-style pizza sort of kid's place of animatronics that's been closed down for years. And his job is to spend the night and clean it. And so... let's just say the animatronics in there are alive, and Nicolas Cage fights and defeats a lot of them through the course of the night. At the same time, a group of dumbass, I think they're teenagers. Jazzy, are they teenagers or are they a little older?
They're either teenagers or college students.
Right. Decide to go in there for whatever reason. I forgot the exact reason. Because
they're stupid teenagers.
Right, yes. So it is a horror movie mixed with Nicolas Cage not saying a line of dialogue and kicking ass and then being the strangest character in that movie.
His romance with the pinball machine, you could feel the passion. I believed it.
While the crazy shit's happening, so while they try and kill him one by one, and he basically takes them apart, he still thinks he's on the clock at his job. So he takes his breaks at his normal time, he downs several energy drinks, and plays the pinball machine that's in there for exactly the time that he has for his break, and then he gets back to work to cleaning.
And I swear, every scene with a pinball machine is shot like the most romantic, passionate scene ever.
He is extremely excited.
Where can I watch this?
I think it's on Hulu.
Okay.
It's called Willy's Wonderland.
This is a thing I will be attempting. I have a charming thing to inform the people of. Guillermo del Toro is at Disneyland.
Right now?
Right now. And he's riding the Haunted Mansion.
Aw.
Oh shit.
Anyways.
That is awesome.
Interlude of wholesome information.
No, it's good to know what one of my favorite filmmakers is doing right now.
I hope that for Guillermo del Toro to feel nothing but contentment and joy at all times.
Of course, he's wonderful.
He is wonderful and sweet. And one of my favorite stories in the world is about how he let the little girl, while he was filming Pan's Labyrinth, call him Totoro.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
That is one of my favorite anecdotes in the world. Anyway.
Oh, my God. I just saw what you mentioned on Twitter. He looks so adorable in this picture.
Look, he looks so happy.
He looks so happy to be at Disneyland. He's got the biggest, goofiest smile on his face. What was that?
Did I mention last week that I saw Turning Red? I don't remember.
Oh, I saw it too.
I've seen it. Oh, let's talk about Turning Red.
Okay.
It's, oh my God, this is my new favorite Pixar. Oh my God, I loved it.
This might be in my top five Pixar films, just because a lot of its inspiration and its ideas feel like they appeal directly to I don't get what white people are like. Of this film doesn't appeal to me. It's like, fuck off. I'm white as shit, and there was plenty that appealed to me. This film has influences from 90s anime, and one of the biggest sources of influence on a writing angle was a Goofy movie. This is perfection.
Did you see the documentary?
Like, I haven't.
Okay. I'm blanking on who it was, but one of the people who worked on the movie, you see, they take time to show them at home as well. Some of the people, and one of them has a framed picture for Ranma one half.
Yeah. There were like a lot of the 90s anime that influenced it were so, Ranma.
It's totally, yeah.
Yeah, Ranma, Inuyasha, which, oh, talk to me more, filmmakers.
Hey, want to hear a funny egg story?
Sure.
I got into Ranma one half because, while still not realizing that I'm trans, like, that's specifically because of the implication of that story.
Yeah, that's fair. But no. Like, I was Inuyasha trash when I was the age of these characters, when I was a teenager, around the same age as these characters in the movie. So the fact that this influence is there is fucking amazing to me. And again, talk to me more, filmmakers.
Listen, I don't know who doesn't find everything about this movie relatable. This is the most relatable movie Pixar has ever made for me in my entire life.
Also, Abby is the best fucking character.
I've just, yes, movie that, like, I've never seen a movie so accurately depict my relationship to my mother. Ever. I've never felt so seen. Oh my god. I was crying. I watched it at like 2 a.m. I was crying.
There was so much about it I liked. I thought the art style was amazing. Like, everyone felt so expressive. The mom character. I'm not a fan of the overprotective mom characters in a lot of media because I find they're handled poorly 9 out of 10 times. This is one of the major exceptions. I fucking loved the mother in this movie just because I thought they struck a good balance of making it understandable that she's not exactly in the right here, but still making it funny. So still making it funny while making a point. So if that makes sense,
it's a very personal film. I can feel, and I like that you can feel the love put into every moment of this. You know, it's definitely a film that has no cynicism, and it's such a fresh vision for Pixar. Like, I love it because it's so different.
Well, and this is also it's a movie for me also that it's nostalgia for a period of time that I was actually a child for.
Oh yeah,
it's set in 2002.
Was also a children at that time.
Yeah, I would have been turning 7 that year, so.
No, I was really little, but, like, I was around. I remember 2002.
I was 11.
There was a lot in this movie where I was like, oh, shit, I remember those things.
Tamagotchi.
Yeah, I remember Tamagotchi. Apparently, those things are back, kind of, I guess.
Yeah, I have one.
Also, can we just mention the Twilight parody? I forgot her name. She was holding the book. Twilight.
The Indian girl. She was reading Not Twilight.
Oh jeez, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, it was very much quote Not Twilight quote.
It's very. There's something really, really fascinating about this movie. Listen, because these things, right, that this movie is being uncritically and nostalgically bubbly and joyful about, like boy bands and Tamagotchis and being a 12-year-old girl and reading Twilight and all of these things, like, these are things that have been punchlines. Because everything that is enjoyed predominantly by preteen girls, it exists purely to be a punchline for nerd culture for the past, like, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just something so interesting and surreal about witnessing this movie where, like, all of these things are just presented as, like, genuinely normal childhood things. Yeah, do you know what kids did? They wrote fan fiction.
Right, right. It's so weird when I see people going, oh, these characters act so cringy. Guess what, genius? That's you years ago. That's you when you were that age.
I sent a picture.
Nightfall.
Oh my god, that's beautiful. Can I just say, Abby's probably my favorite. She was the very stoic, snarky girl was my second favorite.
Maymay and Miriam are going to get to high school and start dating.
I could see it. Yeah.
Miriam is a lesbian experiencing some compet and.
Yeah, and I could see. I wouldn't mind a sequel showing these girls in high school. I know there's probably no need for it, but it's like,
how about a show?
I just love these characters so much. I just want something, honestly.
How about a show?
This would be so great to get like the How to Train Your Dragon or Kung Fu Panda treatment.
Disney Plus original animated show.
This is A plus material to do a show with.
You can do so much with it. You can like explore other themes of childhood and puberty, which that movie was. It was just puberty the movie, but in a good way.
Oh yeah. Like I said, favorite character was Abby because this is just me. Like just this hyperactive, like, yeah, hype about everything. That's just me as a person, so.
Really? I couldn't tell. I am glad this, by the way, that we all universally love the movie.
I loved it so much. I loved it so much. I'm so happy that this movie exists.
Me too. And
I can cry. I'm sorry. I realize that this isn't necessarily a thing that you guys are going to relate to as much, but there's a whole generation of little kids who are going to grow up having periods just being presented to them as this normal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Through this movie. And my heart, like, I can't even tell you. The degree of like happiness that brings me. It's like, yes, this is a normal thing. The same way that, and I don't really want to hear it from people about that being inappropriate. I don't want to hear from the generation.
Like, yeah, I've been hearing a lot of people.
That was like every other fucking joke about teenage boys going through puberty and masturbating in a sock.
Can I just say, I find it weird that whenever I see a dude review this movie, their biggest comparison saying that this is a lesser version of the Studio Ghibli film Only Yesterday, when Only Yesterday and Turning Red are two entirely different films. The only difference is, the only similarity they have is that they talk about periods at one point. And I do mean for Only Yesterday at one point.
Also, some good news. Did you see that the filmmaker, the director, Domishi, got a promotion at Pixar?
Good. I feel like Pixar has been kind of hit and miss lately, and
she's
this gonna
be
so
a
good
production
so,
leader.
Yeah, I feel like Pixar has been rather hit and miss lately, so I think this could bring it back to hit after hit.
Also, 4Town is the best band.
I'm not even into boy bands yet. 4Town was the fucking best.
Also, I didn't realize until the credits that it was written by, the music was written by Billie Eilish and Phineas, so.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Maybe that's why I liked 4Town.
I mean, Billie Eilish and Phineas, as a talented combination, so. They should have promoted that with the trailers.
Right? The music was very good.
Yes, it was. But Billie Eilish just won an Oscar, so yeah.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, at the event and then nobody's talking about the awards. They're talking about the other thing, which we brought up, which we will not dig that conversation back up. I don't want to beat a dead horse.
I'll just say that one thing. Yes. The Academy decided, Bullshit. That's all I can say. That is such bullshit how the Academy decided to deal with this.
Well, yeah, of course. But they're going to... The Academy is going to Academy, and they're going to make bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I wanted to bring up something that I've been into a lot recently. I've currently finished season one of Euphoria, and honestly, I'm loving that show.
Nice.
It's ridiculous. It's like exaggerated. It's partially real. It's HBO, so it's very exploitative at times. But I kind of fucking love it. I love it for its messiness. It's like, imagine if like a Riverdale was like uncensored and done well.
Well, dang.
Like a teen drama that deals with real issues, but also is not afraid to use exaggerated filmmaking and storytelling. The cinematography is so good. Oh my God. It's phenomenal. And, you know, Hunter Schafer, trans representation.
Queen.
We stan. Zendaya is great, but Hunter on the screen. There's something I want to bring up about it, and I appreciate it, is that I don't know if I've ever seen any media that portrays a cis character treating a trans character in a way that's as good as Euphoria handles it. Zendaya's character, Rue, kind of views Hunter Schafer's character, Jules, puts her on a pedestal. And it's something I don't think I've run across. And it's kind of nice.
To see a trans girl in a role like that.
Yes. It's like she is loved. And while not a perfect character, she's flawed just as everybody else. It's nice to feel like we matter.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want me to play my guessing the plot of Euphoria from what I've seen on TikTok game?
I think that's as perfect because I have not seen season two, but I've seen season one.
What I'm pretty sure happens in season one.
Okay. I want you to do it, and I can be the check against it.
My understanding, Zendaya is a drug addict.
Correct.
Correct. She's actively using like heroin and ecstasy, definitely ecstasy based on the whole aesthetic of that show. She can't possibly not be doing hallucinogens.
No.
No.
Her choice is pills.
Okay. Well, ecstasy is usually in a pill.
Right, but like prescription medication.
She's doing oxy and shit like that. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, Zendaya's character Rue is a drug addict.
Yes.
My understanding, Jules is like new to the school.
Yep.
I knew it. Look at me, I'm so smart. And she and Zendaya are dating, like they're in love.
Love is there, but dating is not. It's messy. It's okay. Not really dating.
And then Zendaya has this, and then, okay, the connecting tissue is that Zendaya's got this friend, Lexi, who is, as I understand it, not that important a character, but is like the connecting tissue between the other two main characters, which is Maddie and Cassie, who are best friends.
Yes.
And they're cheerleaders. And Maddie has a super toxic giant boyfriend.
Yes. You mean the psychopathic villain of the show, yes.
Oh, okay.
He is a monster.
I know some shit, like I know some shit that goes down in season two. I don't
please don't say anything about that. I don't know anything. Any other
and
guessing?
I understand that they're having lots of sex and doing lots of drugs. Zendaya has a drug dealer who may or may not be an adult. I don't know.
Yes.
And he's got a little, and the drug dealer has a little brother.
Yes.
Who is also a drug dealer.
Yes. And they are, can I tell you that outside of one other character, the drug dealer is probably the most wholesome male character on the show?
I've heard this. And I find that so interesting that the dude dealing drugs to high schoolers is apparently the nicest character on this
yes.
show.
Yes. Well, not nicest character, nicest male character, I would say. Outside of one exception, he's a pretty decent guy, but the drug dealer is like the best.
And I basically get the sense that this is high school drama, regular like Pretty Little Liars turned up to 11.
Oh, with excessive nudity. Probably one of the most I've ever seen in any HBO show. Like, there's dicks on top of dicks on top of dicks.
My understanding is that Cassie cries a lot.
Yeah, her character's tragic. So.
And that Rue has like BPD. Like Rue apparently, like she's not, she doesn't treat the people who like her very well.
She's an addict and also has mental illnesses. Yes.
And I think that there's like no actual school happening. They appear to just exist in hallways.
Okay, that's
and
fair.
Not actually go to class. They just kind of sit in the bathroom and talk and wear fetish gear at school for some reason.
Oh, Kat, well, she has a reason.
Yes, there's Barbie Ferreira is there and hot. I don't know anything she does. I just know that she's there and that she's sexy.
Is that the actress's name?
The plus size actress.
Yeah, she is. She's a complicated character too. they deal with her weight being a part of it too. And she has toxic traits.
Well, yeah, okay. This is my number one takeaway. My number one is that every single character on this show is a toxic person.
That's hard, because Rue has the excuse of being with her her conditions, in addition to also just being an addict, and addicts are assholes. I'm gonna say
as someone who I have a family member who I personally, and this is actually kind of part of what made me angry when I would listen to fans talk about Euphoria in the third person sense of I don't know what's happening here. I have a family member who passed away earlier last year.
I'm sorry.
Due to drug abuse. It's not okay, but it's, you know, it is what it is. And I don't care for the way fans talk about Rue in the context of her drug abuse. I am positive and like no, your drug abuse is not an excuse to treat people shitty, but I'm absolutely positive that Rue does a lot of bad and selfish things.
They're missing the fucking point.
To the ends and means of that. But, like, I've heard fans of the show refer to being like, oh, you're taking, like, why are you siding with a fucking junkie and shit like that? And I'm like, oh, okay, so literally no one you have ever loved has had an addiction problem. Cool.
That is completely wrong, because like, how do you have not watched the show at that point? The show is about showing.
To which they're correct that, like, you shouldn't trust what Rue says. I'm sure she lies a lot.
She is an addict.
But I would hope, whenever I get around to actually watching this show, that they are portraying this through the light of...
Of a disease. I'm going to confirm that 100% it does. And there's an entire episode dedicated to the disease that is addiction, and the whole point is empathy. Like, I don't know how you watch that show and not get that's like, the point, because it clearly goes out of its way to tell you.
My understanding is that the show wants you to empathize with Rue. I would hope that what the show wants you to do is empathize with Rue without necessarily excusing her actions as much as trying to get you to understand
Yes, it does. 100%.
Why and how a person behaves like this.
It does. And I think your analysis of everyone being a little bit toxic is correct. But I would say that it's
like this, right? Honestly, my investment in the show, I'm the most interested to watch the show for Cassie. Because the more I hear about her, the more I'm like, oh, I'm going to relate to her.
Which, Cassie?
Yeah.
She is definitely, a tragic character. And I really feel sorry for her over a lot of the time. She's also hot.
My understanding also is this happens. My understanding is that this happens in season one. There's a party and she throws up in a hot tub.
Throws up in a hot tub. I don't remember that happening.
Okay, it must happen in season two. I apologize.
It's okay.
Throws up in a hot tub at some point.
That's not a spoiler for me. That's like that fits in line with this show.
There's something about a carousel.
In season one.
I don't know.
I think we're getting to the point where we're going past season one.
Okay. No, that is season one. Oh, I remember.
I feel like people talk about it like it happened in season one.
That's when she's on drugs.
Oh, other people are using drugs too. Okay.
You're asking about the hallucinogenic ones. That's that scene.
I don't know. I feel like you can't call this show Euphoria and have this like purple glitter aesthetic to your show about drug addicts and not have them using hallucinogens. You just kind of like.
Also, I think Euphoria refers to something else in addition to that. There's a lot of
sex
layers to the title of it being Euphoria. Huh?
Lots of sex. Anyway.
I mean, yes, but it's also about love.
Speaking of the sex.
It's also just that the high school. Where is this show set? Is it set in California? It looks like California.
It's not. I don't know where, but I can tell you that I live about 5 minutes away from where they shoot. They shoot one of the locations. It's literally like a store that I recognize, and it's basically the hangout where the drug dealer is. And I'm just like, oh, I know that place. So I that was kind of cool to see. There is lots of sex in that show. It is a lot.
Whenever you see someone, I went to Santa Rosa one time, which is where they filmed, which was where Woodsboro, quote unquote, was. And it's super fun to walk around Santa Rosa and be like, there's the city hall where they had to pretend it was a high school because the school boards were assholes. There's that town square.
I was watching an episode of the show 911, and then I stopped and went, wait a minute. And like, it was a supermarket that is literally 2 minutes away from me.
Okay, I need to depart.
I think this is Jazzy, did you have something to say? I think this is getting toward the
final. I think this is a good part to end.
Okay. My overall thoughts is you should definitely see Euphoria and make up your own mind about whether or not it's successful in telling all of its themes. I think it all depends. Mileage may vary on each individual, but personally, I really do love the show. If you can handle it, there's a lot of triggering moments. There's a lot of sexual assault related stuff. There's a lot of sex in general. There's a lot of drug addiction stuff. There's a lot of really difficult subject material being covered, and it's HBO and it's everything is shown, so I just wanted to give that little warning if you're going to dive into it, but I love it. And Lizzie, if you see it, get back to me.
We will revisit a part two of this
Euphoria part two discussion,
and then I'll watch it.
Catch up to me, watch season one.
I probably should too, just so I can not sit here being silent.
You should. Watch Okay, so a little primer. Season one is 8 episodes, but then they did a 2-part winter special in between seasons that are listed as Part 1 Rue, Part 2 Jewels, that are, for some reason, on HBO Max, considered separate titles. So you have to search those 2 episodes separately. So they are basically 9 and 10 of Season 1, and then Season 2 is 8 episodes. Yeah. But anyway, I think this is a good point that we've hit all our points. We put to rest the Twilight series. We talked about some great stuff. And I guess it's time for us to plug stuff. Jazzy, do you want to plug where people can find you?
You can find me over at Lady Jazzington on Twitter, same name on Twitch. By the time this episode goes up, I stream every Saturday, and by the time this goes up, we're about to start Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep in the KH marathon. Also, I want to take a moment to say that you can hear my voice in Blitz Games' new Yaoi visual novel, Camp Buddy Scoutmaster Season, available on their website for $39.99 US dollars. Warning. Lots of sex. So if you're not into it, and you're not 18, don't buy it.
And when I have a little bit of extra money, I'm going to buy it, even though it's not to my tasting.
It's not to my taste either. But I've been enjoying a lot of the fan art people have been sending me. It's a surreal experience to get fucking fan art of a character I voice.
That's awesome, Lizzie.
You can find me at Lizzie Lemon Drop on Twitter or at The Final Whore on TikTok, where I talk about all this shit. Next week, someone remind me that I want to get into the Michael Bay is or isn't an auteur thing.
Yes, we will discuss that.
I wanted to talk about that this week and I forgot.
That's okay. We were putting off the Euphoria discussion, so finally had it. Yeah, my name is Crystal Williams. You can read my articles on Medium. You can also follow me on Twitter on Crystal W Rex. And I don't know, throw us a few bucks if you're into it. You know, give us monies. Go buy Camp Buddy. Show us some love. We appreciate you for listening and for joining us on our journey. I'm sorry that my usual sex joke quantity has reduced in the last 2 weeks. I promise to get better and continue to annoy my co-host as much as possible.
Do better. Do better.
Oh, God, it's brutal out here.
Olivia Rodrigo swept the Grammys. I am so proud of her.
That definitely wasn't an intentional reference at all. Nope.
Anyway. I won't talk too much about it, but baby's on the Taylor Swift path, and I'm so proud of her. Anyway.
Stream Olivia Rodrigo's Sour or buy the album. Give us money. We love you all. Please listen to the next one. We'll have someone fun on for sure. But until that, see you next time. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye.